Members, 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. And members, today we have testimony on House File 2125, Governor Walz's tax bill. And so, members and audience, we have over 30 people on the list who would like to testify. I'd like to try to get through as many today as possible. So I'm going to ask all of our testifiers to hold that to 2 minutes. We're going to give you a signal, raise my hand, or Mr. Jessen here will raise his hand, and we'd like you to complete at that point, and so we can get through. Members, you certainly can ask questions of each and every testifier, but again, we're trying to get through all, so try to, if it's one that maybe could be done offline or something, that would be good, but feel free to make sure you ask a question if for the good of the order. So with that, we do not have a quorum quite yet. So we will start with the testifiers, and then when we get a quorum, we will handle some business. So Jan Callison is first. Bradley Peterson is next. And John Dukic is third. So if we could kind of get ready on that. So, good morning. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jane Callison. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner. I also serve on the Board of Directors for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And thank you.
Very good.
I'm speaking today in support of both the proposal to exempt local governments from sales tax on construction materials and to increase county program aid. And, of course, I want to start by thanking Governor Walz and Commissioner Bowerly for including these two proposals in the governor's tax bill. The current process for obtaining a sales tax exemption on the purchase of construction materials is costly and complicated. Local governments are discouraged from using it because the complexity often outweighs the benefits. The proposal before you would streamline and simplify the process. It promises to decrease the cost of public construction projects paid for by local governments and to provide property tax relief. Increasing county program aid is important because it supports our system of state-mandated, county-administered social services. Counties provide essential services to all Minnesotans on behalf of the state, including in the areas of health and human services, public safety, criminal justice, transportation, and many more. Increasingly, the state has shifted the cost of many of these programs to the county property taxpayer. When this happens, counties respond by raising property taxes, a more regressive form of taxation. The county's role in administering state-created programs continues to grow. State funding has not. Since 2002, it actually has declined. Total county program aid in 2002 was $234 million. 16 years earlier, in 2002, it was $265 million. In 2002, CPA made up 16% of the total certified county levy across the state. By 2018, it had declined to 7%. In 2002, Hennepin County received $54.3 million in CPA. In 2018, Hennepin County received $32.2 million, or $22 million less. Through county program aid, the state supports services in all 87 counties. CPA also reaches all Minnesota taxpayers. This is by contrast to local government aid, which is not universally available across Minnesota.
Commissioner, that's 2 minutes, so if you finish up, please.
Returning to 2002 funding levels will begin to redress the ongoing shifting of the funding of essential programs from the state to Minnesota counties. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we do now have a quorum, so has anyone had a chance to look at the March 12, 2019 minutes? Representative Leslie Gard moves approval of the March 12, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on those? If not, I'll call for the vote on the approval of the March 12, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The minutes are approved. All right. We will continue. And Bradley Peterson, not here. So John Dukic would be next. And then I would ask the person who I call on deck to also join the other seat there, and so Beth Cadoon is on deck. Welcome, and please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukic. I'm with the Minnesota High Tech Association.
We're a trade association that represents 300 science and technology companies across the state of Minnesota. And we're here to express our support for the provisions in Article 2 related to the funding of the Angel Investment Tax Credit, and we'd like to thank the governor for including those in his tax bill. The Angel Tax Credit Program helps reduce some of the risk of the inherent risk in investing in early stage companies by providing an incentive to invest in Minnesota's science and technology startups. Since the start of the Angel Tax Credit Program in 2010, more than $421 million of private investment in Minnesota companies has been tied to the credit. In 2017 alone, the last year that the credit was available, 101 Minnesota startups benefited from the Angel Tax Credit. States like Iowa, North Dakota, Illinois, and Wisconsin all have Angel Investment Tax Credit programs. And the Angel Tax Credit is a successful tool for helping emerging companies raise the capital they need to grow. For example, according to data from PwC and MoneyTree, in the 8 years before the Angel Tax Credit was established, Minnesota-based companies raised $328.6 million in seed or early-stage funding rounds. Those are funding rounds most likely to be tied to the Angel Tax Credit. In the 8 years following enactment of the Angel Tax Credit, Minnesota-based companies raised $608.5 million in seed or early-stage funding rounds. And so we're hopeful to see the Angel Tax Credit reinstated this year and ask for your support there, and would like to thank the governor again. We'd also like to express some concerns with the data center language in Article 3. The proposed changes to the data center tax incentive are potentially damaging to Minnesota's technology economy. First, the changes hurt those companies that have already used the exemption, including those that would not have built a data center, refurbished an existing data center, if not for the incentive. Clawing back the credit is unfair to those companies that have decided to use the credit, the same companies that help create jobs and data centers in Minnesota.
Mr. Dugich, please finish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secondly, the proposed changes make Minnesota less competitive. There are about 20 states with clear exemptions or other incentives available for data centers. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm kind of giving everyone at the two-minute warning to let you finish up. So thank you. So Beth Cadoon and Paul Egger is on deck. So welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here on behalf of the United for Jobs Coalition. There'll be a handout going around that lists the 80-plus local chambers of commerce and business associations around the state. I'm here to express our strong concern and opposition to many of the tax changes contained in Governor Wall's proposal. Let's be clear. This is a huge tax increase on our private sector job creators. Over $2 billion of tax increases over the next 4 years just in the general fund changes alone. Half of these would fall basically on our corporations and half on our pass-through entities. We agree that Minnesota needs investment in order to have a strong and growing economy. But a critical factor of that investment is we need private sector investment. We need our private sector job creators to be investing in their Minnesota operations and in their Minnesota employees. We're raising taxes on areas that were already amongst the highest in the nation. And as been mentioned in testimony before, the federal tax changes are actually going to make Minnesota state tax rates even more impactful. We're very concerned about the repeals of the 2017 tax reforms, where we kind of helped reduce some of those fixed costs of doing business in the state. By Governor Walz wants to reinstate that automatic tax inflator on property taxes that's already raising taxes where we rank second highest in many of the areas. Was mentioned by Mr. Dugich, who were very concerned over the repeal of a sales tax exemption on qualified data centers. This is really the state's integrity, where the business relied on that tax incentive for economic development, invested in the state, and now he's taking back that. There's a letter from COST, the Council of State Taxation, that I encourage you to take a look at as well. It highlights many concerns over the foreign tax provisions, the other corporate tax changes, but one thing I do want to flag is the retroactivity in this tax bill on taxpayers. We're not only going back to 2018 for many of these business tax changes, we're going back to 2017. That's kind of unprecedented, and I would think that would be a concern that you want to look at before going down that path. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So Paul Egger is up, and Mark Woke is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors. We are a trade association with a membership of over 20,000 real estate professionals throughout Minnesota. Mr. Chair, we are continuing to review some of the details and language of the governor's tax proposal. However, I appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts with the committee on several provisions of interest to our members. We appreciate that the governor's tax proposal retains important itemized deductions for homeowners, including the deductions for property taxes and mortgage interest. We also appreciate that the governor's tax proposal conforms to the federal bipartisan budget act of 2018. The BBA included important homeownership tax extender provisions for mortgage debt cancellation relief and mortgage insurance premium deductibility. We would encourage the committee to consider making both of those items permanent features of Minnesota's tax code moving forward. From the department's presentation yesterday, my understanding is the governor's tax proposal attempts to address the federal conformity issue affecting the property tax refund program, which is an important program that provides tax relief directly to homeowners whose property taxes are high relative to their incomes. We support addressing this important issue. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to provide a recommendation and share a concern with the governor's tax bill. Regarding the proposal to conform to the reduced limit on mortgage interest deductibility, the language in the bill does not appear to align with the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act with respect to the grandfathering in of existing loans. For consistency, we think making this provision prospective for new loans, as it is in the TCJA, is a better approach. Mr. Chair, Minnesota Realtors also joins with many others in the business community in opposing the proposal to reinstate the inflator on the statewide business property tax. And finally, we look forward to working with you and the committee as you consider changes to support homeowners and homeownership in the tax bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Now up, Mark Wolk, and then Derek Smigel, and I know if I'm mispronouncing names, you will correct me as you come forward. So, good morning.
Thank you, Chairman. Hello again. Some of you may remember me. My name is Mark Wolk, and I am owner of Stogies on Grand. I will not take up much of your time today. To begin with, I want to be clear that we are not big tobacco. We are the people that absorb the exorbitant tax if it goes back to $3.50 a cigar. When I bought my store 9 years ago, I had no idea that I would have to fight so hard year after year to sell a legal product to consenting adults. I have continued to fight for my business every year. Please do not continue to make the mistake of putting cigars in the same category as cigarettes, hookah, and vape. The cigar industry does not advertise to underage smokers. That is not our demographic. Nor do we endorse or promote underage smoking. Our stores strictly forbid underage individuals from entering our store. I would like to ask each of you to put yourselves in my position. I purchased a family business which is a staple on Grand Avenue and in the community. Over the last decade, I've put my heart and soul into making this into a successful business and provide for my family. After finally passing the bill that put our taxes in an equitable position to our neighboring states and the internet, you are now proposing a 600% increase. Think about that, 600%. This will cripple us. It is so disproportionately high compared to other industries that it is threatening our very existence. Day after day, our customers like to tell us how happy they are to be able to buy locally again. When the taxes went up, we were told that it would curb or eliminate cigar smoking, when in fact, cigar smokers were buying on the internet and taking sales from our local stores. When the tax went down again, the only difference in smoking habits is they began to buy locally and were happy about it. Our industry is here to plead with you not to drive out the few premium stores that are left in our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Derek Smigel.
Smigel, and, yes.
Smigel. And Thank then Doug Gasek is on deck. So welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Derek Smigel. My wife and I are owners of Churchill's Quality Cigars in Victoria, Minnesota. Our vision is to provide a unique experience for cigar smokers to enjoy their 100% legal investment at a competitive price. We've been overwhelmingly accepted by our neighbors and businesses in Victoria and have had nothing but positive comments to say about our business. Prior to the cigar tax reduction, 23.7% of my revenue was paid for cigar tax and sales tax to the state of Minnesota. After the reduction, leveling the playing field versus our neighboring states and online, In 2017, we experienced a 19% growth in our revenue with $3 less per stick, and only paid 22% of our revenue in cigar sales tax because we still had half a year that we were paying the higher tax. In 2018, we had another 12.6% growth with that still $3 decline in price, and only 11% of my revenue now being paid to cigar and sales tax for the full year. Our small business supports five employees and families in and around our community. We pay our property taxes, payroll taxes, and other taxes and fees required by the city, county, and the state of Minnesota. That said, this 600% tax increase makes it impossible to compete with neighboring states in online sales and will most likely close our business. We are not changing the behavior of cigar smokers with taxes. We are only driving consumers to less expensive alternatives to purchase online or across states, resulting in lost sales, pay, jobs, business, and ultimately the state tax dollars. You can tell by my previous statement, 600% tax increase restricts the cash flow, affecting our ability to compete, our ability to pay our employees per hour, and our affecting our ability to continue to engage in our community. Even one of the DFL senators 2 years ago.
You could finish up.
I'm right there.
Thank you.
Even one of the DFL senators 2 years ago said, this is not a health and human services bill. This is about keeping small businesses in Minnesota. We're asking that you say no to the 600% tax increase on legal products so we can keep our small businesses, our jobs, and tax dollars in Minnesota versus driving customers to other states and online where Minnesota not only loses the tax dollars, but we lose our small businesses and many jobs that support our local communities. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Doug Gasick and then Ryan Saylor is on deck.
Good.
Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. My name is Doug Gasick, and I'm the Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. And the mission of the Preservation Alliance is all about connecting people to historic places. And I'm here today to emphasize our concern and urge you to not conform the state historic tax credit with the federal historic tax credit. The state rehab tax credit allows a state income tax equal to 20% of the rehab expenditures for income-producing properties that are on the National Register. House File 2125 breaks that allocation out over 5 years equally to conform with the federal that were enacted in December of 2017. Keep in mind that this is already a credit that can be claimed only after the project is complete. So the money that's invested to complete the work has already been spent. Stretching the historic credit out over a five-year period makes the credit less attractive to investors, but costs the state the same amount of money. What might seem like a good deal to the state won't be when investors choose not to pursue these projects and well-paying specialty construction jobs are lost due to the lack of demand. House File 2125 also calls for these changes to be retroactive to December 2017, which is a real concern. The federal law had transition rules that allowed projects to qualify under the old terms until June of 2018. When the tax conformity bill was vetoed last year, the Department of Revenue published a public statement in October of 2018 stating that the state historic tax credit law had not changed and projects would qualify under the existing terms. At least 20 historic tax credit projects have been approved for allocation certificates in 2018. Changing the terms for those at this point wouldn't be fair. House File 1642, introduced a couple weeks ago by Representatives Joachim, Davids, Carlson, and Beckerfin on this committee, as well as Representative Kosnick, would address our concerns and would keep the state historic tax credit strong and flexible enough to respond to opportunities of privately-led investment throughout the state. I urge you not to include the historic tax credit in House File 2125 and instead adopt the provisions of House File 1642. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ryan Saylor is now up and Molly Moylanen is on deck. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Saylor and I'm Vice President of Development with Timberland Partners and on the Board of Directors for the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. My firm is active in commercial and multifamily residential development and property management in Minnesota and 15 other states. We've used the Minnesota State Historic Tax Credit on many projects and are continually looking for new opportunities to rehabilitate and repurpose historic buildings. As Doug stated, about 20 historic rehab tax credit projects were approved for state allocation certificates in the fiscal year 2018. Most of those, as he stated, were assured by the Department of Revenue that they would qualify under the existing rules. The total estimated economic impact from these projects is $715 million. Directly through the rehabilitation of these 16 buildings, the state historic tax credit created over $393 million of construction activity and supported almost 1,700 jobs in the construction sector. So far in fiscal year 2019, 14 projects have been approved. And these have been spread widely throughout the state in places like Fergus Falls, Faribault, Duluth, Rochester, Moorhead, and St. Cloud. These rehab projects are already underway, putting the people to work and creating new housing and businesses in underutilized buildings. Without access to this credit and favorable terms to get the most investment dollars as possible, the rehabilitation of historic buildings would be cost prohibitive in the current market. Lenders have become more restrictive and risk-averse, and there's a lot of risk in trying to find a new use for deteriorating buildings that have seen a lot of wear and tear. The historic tax credit helps developers like me repurpose historic buildings to be valuable assets for communities for another 50 to 100 years. It's a worthwhile investment and more than pays for itself. I urge you not to adopt the changes in HF 2125 and instead support the provisions in House File 1642. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Molly Moylanen and then Nan Madden, if you'd please come down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Molly Moylanen with Clearway Minnesota and Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. We appreciate this opportunity to thank the governor for proposing to reinstate some key tobacco taxes that were cut in 2017. When it comes to reducing smoking, we know the formula that works. High prices and reducing youth access, coupled with prevention education and cessation services, all work together to cut smoking rates. But price remains paramount in this tested formula. Research has showed us that because of the 2013 tobacco tax increase, more than 60% of Minnesota smokers made a quit attempt. And the year after the tax was implemented, 15% of all Minnesota smokers successfully quit. But that was 6 years ago, and our progress is stalling. Despite tremendous progress in reducing youth commercial tobacco use, for the first time in a generation, we are seeing a dramatic jump, fueled by an increase in youth cigar use and skyrocketing rates of vaping. Previous legislation weakened the definition of what constitutes a premium cigar and reduced that cap by 85%. The governor's bill restores the cap to $3.50 from 50 cents. There's no other product with a maximum tax of 50 cents, regardless of the retail price. If your cigar costs $3 or $10 or $20, under current law, the tax stays at 50 cents. Cigars are just as dangerous as cigarettes and don't deserve special tax treatment. We are grateful to the governor for showing his commitment to health in our state with this and other provisions, like restoring the annual cigarette tax increase, which tracks with inflation to prevent youth smoking in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Nan Madden is up, and Gary Carlson is on deck. Welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I'd like to thank Governor Waltz for proposing a tax plan that raises revenues to make investments that improve Minnesotans' lives and build a broader prosperity, that puts everyday Minnesotans first, and reverses course on tax cuts made in the past that have proven to be unsustainable and unaffordable. In terms of specifics, I'd like to start by thanking the governor for his commitment to expanding the working family credit, which is an important policy for supporting everyday workers and their families across the state. The Working Family Credit plays an essential role in offsetting the impact of other taxes, as well as ensuring that our workers can afford what they need to succeed in the workforce. I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you took the time last week to hear a number of options about Working Family Credit expansion, and with the governor's tax bill, you now have several strong expansion proposals to consider. In tax conformity, the bill continues to take family size into account in our tax code through the state personal and dependent exemption, and we support maintaining the current exemption for seniors, people living with disabilities, and families with dependents in the circuit breaker and renter's credit. We also support treating all homeowners equitably by allowing taxpayers with ITINs to qualify for homestead status. We also appreciate that the governor's tax bill raises revenues in order to make critical investments in Minnesota workers, their families, and their communities, and it does so by conforming to many of the federal tax laws provisions relating to corporations and businesses. Recognizing that corporations were the largest beneficiaries of the federal tax law, and by reversing tax cuts that have proven to be unaffordable. Governor Waltz's tax bill is a strong foundation to start from, and we encourage the committee to add additional progressive components as you put together your omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Gary Carlson and Matt Hilgert is on deck.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank the governor for including in House File 2125 two important provisions that the League has been advocating for the last couple of years. Number one is in Article 3, Sections 5 through 8. This is the sales tax exemption streamlining on construction material purchases by local units of government. We think it's time to pass that into law, and we appreciate the governor including that in his bill. And then secondly, Article 5, Section 1 is the appropriation increase for local government aid. That is consistent with the appropriation increase in Representative Marquardt's bill, Representative Vang's bill, Representative Lislegard's bill, Representative Brand's bill, and Representative Pertaz's bill. So we very much appreciate the attention paid to the local government aid funding increase. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Matt Hilgert and then Keith Carlson is on deck. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. My name is Matt Hilgert. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. We would like to thank the governor and administration for including one of our top priorities this year, that is the County Program Aid and Local Government Aid Funding Package Bill that we just heard on Monday in Property Tax Division. As members, especially members who sit on other committees, are aware, mandates are driving the cost of a lot of the business that counties do, particularly in the areas of health and human services. Just on Monday, we heard from Lacqua-Parle County Commissioner Todd Patzer what happens when CPA goes from being 34% of your budget to being less than 2% of your budget. So we thank the governor and a bipartisan cadre of members on this committee for supporting that bill and proposal. We are also grateful for what Mr. Carlson mentioned, which is the inclusion of the construction material sales tax exemption. Lastly, very quickly on two things, AMC has a position on the buffer credit proposal that's included in this bill, but it is general, that landowners should have some form of reimbursement for the lands taken in 2017. We are looking forward to working with the Department of Revenue, county auditors, county assessors to make sure that we can administer that and that administration isn't overly burdensome or costly. And then lastly, we are also thankful that the Department of Revenue is working with county assessors to address what Representative Pertaz has brought up in the fractional homestead issue, and we look forward to continuing to work with them on that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Keith Carlson, and on deck, Jill Larson.
Thank you, welcome. Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 14 of the state's larger and growing counties. I also want to thank the governor for including the construction material streamlining for the sales tax, as well as reducing the period of ownership required for qualifying for the senior deferral from 15 to 5 years. We also support conceptually the issue of the buffer credit included in there, but do have concerns as to the qualifications when individuals receive damages at a future date as to whether that would be adequately captured under the proposal there. We do have the same concerns as Mr. Hilgert indicated with regards to the fractional homesteads. We believe the legislation that Representative Hertaz have sponsored in the past is the appropriate solution to that issue. Finally, we are very grateful for the $30 million of additional funding for county program aid. One issue that has not been raised before that would be addressed by this proposal is nearly half of the members' counties on this committee will be suffering 2 years of reductions in county program aid if funding is not provided for the increase. So we highly recommend the governor's proposal in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So Jill Larson and Kenza Hajimusa is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. We respectfully oppose this proposal because it will substantially increase taxes on Minnesota employers and harm the state's competitiveness. We believe tax conformity should be used as an opportunity to make Minnesota's tax climate more competitive rather than as a means to simply increase taxes on businesses. While we do appreciate the provision that eliminates the corporate AMT, unfortunately, this proposal adopts all the federal tax increases on businesses from base broadening, but provides only a minimal amount of offsetting tax relief. The federal tax provisions that broaden the corporate income tax base were offset by reducing the federal tax rate, and we believe that if Minnesota chooses to adopt those provisions, there should be some offsetting tax relief. This proposal would, on net, raise corporate income taxes by $600 million, 22% in fiscal year 2021. It also raises taxes on pass-through companies, on all Minnesota businesses by raising their property taxes, and on Minnesota companies that have invested in building data centers and bringing high-tech jobs to Minnesota. We know that corporate income taxes are one of the most regressive and volatile revenue sources, and so we don't think that Minnesota should be increasing their reliance on that. Minnesota jobs and the success of our economy depend on our businesses' ability to be globally competitive, and we think that adopting the international income provisions will make Minnesota's tax system more regressive. It will make Minnesota companies less competitive, and due to likely constitutional challenges, it will create fiscal uncertainty and instability for the state. It will result in large tax increases on many Minnesota-based headquartered companies, putting them at a competitive disadvantage against people that they're competing with that are international companies. Minnesota is a water's edge state, meaning we typically have only taxed income earned in the U.S., and adopting these provisions would be a significant departure from that policy. And Minnesota would be an outlier. Most states don't tax any income earned by U.S. companies outside the U.S. and will not be adopting the foreign income provisions. There are constitutional issues. Taxing income earned outside the U.S. without fairly apportioning it will likely be challenged in court. The Foreign Commerce Clause prohibits a state from discriminating against foreign commerce, and the retroactivity of the tax increases also raises constitutional concerns.
Ms. Larson. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We also oppose the data center sales tax limit exemption and the business property tax inflator being reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think is Kenza Haj Musa? Yeah. Okay. So then next is Katie Schultz and then Deb McMillan. So please state your name and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Katie Schultz, and I'm the Tax and Financial Services Director at Prepare and Prosper. We are the largest free tax preparation provider in the state of Minnesota, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of extensions to the Working Family Credit and also to the expanded eligibility of the Homestead Property Tax Refund for I-10 holders, as reflected in House File 2125. As I said, Prepare and Prosper is the largest free tax preparation provider in the state of Minnesota. And this is our peak time, so happy to join you during that tax season joy. We work with about 500 volunteers to serve roughly 13,000 Minnesotans with free tax preparation services, and we pair with that financial services and savings opportunities that people can use to really increase the impact of their refunds. During this time of year, we're running 9 tax sites across the metro area. And in my role at Prepare and Prosper, I can see firsthand the impact that credits like the Working Family Credit have on a family's income, the way that that can boost and make a big difference to our neighbors, our communities, and our overall economy. And I'm pleased by Governor Walz's commitment to expanding the Working Family Credit. Expanding this credit builds on documented success of this credit in supporting work, reducing poverty, and also improving the health and education outcomes of children. Prepare and Prosper testified last week in support of several bills to expand the Working Family Credit, and we've come back again this week because we believe these expansions would truly enhance the ability of Minnesotans and their families across the state to meet basic needs, save for unexpected emergencies, and look forward to a more stable financial future. In the proposed bill, we're also pleased to see the expansion to the property of the property tax refund by allowing Minnesotans with individual tax identification numbers to qualify for homestead status. Our organization works with many families with ITINs who are on a path to legal status and play an important role in our state and economy. We support this expansion for an estimated 1,200 homeowners.
Ms. Schultz, please finish up.
Okay. I appreciate the opportunity here and also want to say that I would support exemptions, the maintaining of exemptions for property tax for renters and homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you. Deb McMillan and then Brad Meyer is on deck. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm Vice President of Public Policy for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. We represent 700 businesses and about 55,000 employees in the western suburbs. About 80% of our members are small businesses with less than 50 employees. In fact, the majority have less than 25 employees. This is not unlike any other community in Minnesota. Our members are small restaurants, retailers, and service providers whose businesses support their families and the families of their employees. They are the fabric of our communities and have stores and offices on your main streets. It's well documented that Minnesota's business taxes are some of the highest in the country, and the cumulative effect of increased corporate, individual, and statewide property taxes continues to chip away at business competitiveness. The increased cost of doing business prevents business expansion, ability to increase wages, provide benefits, and maintain parking lots and buildings. Proposed mandates that businesses provide expansive benefits to employees without regards to impact to their business or their employees add to unpredictability and increased challenges as companies try to plan for the future. These costs are real and to their businesses and their employees. I urge you to carefully consider any additional burdens you are placing on businesses and their employees and take the opportunity to provide relief to Minnesota's job creators and make Minnesota a great place to do business. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much. We have Brad Meyer and then Barty Wai is on deck.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Brad Meyer with the Owatonna Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for the hearing today. Thinking about what we could talk about regarding this tax bill that you haven't heard and how it impacts our businesses here in down in Owatonna and outstate Minnesota. We're a growing business community. We're heavy in manufacturing. We have double the state average in manufacturing employment in our community and hundreds of small employers, 10 employees or less as well. So we've got companies that are trying to compete globally and their fixed costs are impacted by state tax increases, and we have local businesses who are trying to make a living and somehow stay afloat. And all of these things impact not only our companies, but would impact their customers and their employees as well. Quite honestly, in our community, our businesses are our identity as a community as well. So as you're contemplating the governor's tax proposal, $2 billion on business, please consider the identities of our communities in outstate and how this will impact these businesses. The corporate tax rate, the pass-through, statewide property tax, all impacts all of them. And where you push and pull on your priorities make a difference. We've been waiting in southern Minnesota for 60 years to get Highway 14 completed, and we're getting close. We realize there's a lot of priorities in the state of Minnesota, and you can't go to the bank, so to speak, of businesses and put them out of business by increasing them and putting them in such a tough situation. So thanks for your consideration today, and have a great day.
Thank you so much. Barty Wahi, I'm now up, and then Chris Stenson is on deck. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Barty Wahi, and I'm the Executive Director of the Children's Defense Fund, and I'm here to talk a little bit about how taxes help children. Thank you for the opportunity for us to speak today and to support in support of the governor's tax bill. At CDF Minnesota, we know that family income affects children's outcomes. They do better when their families are doing better. As little as $1,000 in additional family income per year during a child's early years has a proven impact on later academic and economic performance. That is why we are here today to thank the governor for centering children and families in his tax proposal, because it ensures that the state has the revenue required to meet its important policy priorities, and its most important priority, children. For example, this bill expands the working family tax credit. This is a vital necessity for low-income working families. Research shows that this type of credit has a proven impact in supporting children at different developmental stages, including prenatal and birth outcomes, increasing test scores for school-age children, and supporting children and youth as they move into college and later success. With respect to conforming to the federal tax code, this bill protects deductions and credits that Minnesota children and families count on, like protecting families with children by maintaining personal and dependent exemptions. And finally, this bill acknowledges that Minnesota requires appropriate levels of revenue in order to face some of our most pressing policy challenges head-on. Minnesota is in the midst of a demographic shift. We have a rapidly aging and an increasingly diverse population. We appreciate revenue raised in this tax bill that will be used in investments in affordable housing, education, and other areas that meet the dynamic and changing demographic shifts we face. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. We believe that our state is not only has an economic imperative to support children, it has a moral imperative to invest in our earliest and our youngest so that all children thrive. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Stenson now up, and Anna Odegaard is on deck, so welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Chris Stenson. I'm the policy director for SEIU Local 284. We represent more than 9,000 school service employees across the state, and our locals working for a future where students in every Minnesota school have all that they need to succeed from pre-K to career. I want to thank Governor Walz for not conforming to the federal 529 changes. SEIU opposes the use of public money, including tax deductions and credits, for private school tuition. Public schools accept all students, including all religions, sexual orientations, gender identities, children of color, children with special needs or learning disabilities. And at a time when we need to address racial and geographic disparities in our schools, vouchers would starve those same schools. More broadly, we support a tax system that promotes fairness and raises adequate revenue to fund essential services, especially education.
Thank you. Now up, Anna Odegaard, and on deck is Sarah Lestikol.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna Odegaard, and I'm the legislative advocate for the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. We are a statewide coalition of nonprofit organizations working to support asset building and asset preservation for lower-income families. First, we support the governor's significant increase to the working family credit that you've heard quite a bit about, including his targeted increase to families with three or more children. I'd like to thank the governor for recognizing that there's real value in ensuring an equitable credit structure for larger families. As Ms. Wahi was just mentioning, children benefit enormously from family financial security. We see this in measures of educational success, health outcomes, and their ability to be financially successful as adults. This committee has also considered a bill that would increase the working family credit for low-income working adults without dependents. This group includes people just starting their work lives, non-custodial parents, people living with disabilities, and others. The working family credit incentivizes work and offsets other taxes low-income folks pay, so hardworking Minnesotans can catch up on bills, make important purchases, and save for the future. Support that's critical for low-income families and workers without dependents. So we'd like to thank the governor for prioritizing the working family credit in his bill, and also hope the governor and this committee will consider the other working family credit proposals on the table for the omnibus bill. Similarly, we're grateful that the governor proposes to maintain the value of the current renter's credit. Lower income renters, especially seniors, people with disabilities, and families with children, count on this credit to reduce the high burden of housing costs. I know there's also a proposal headed to this committee that would increase the renter's credit, and I hope the governor and this committee will consider whether there is a place in the final tax bill for that proposal. Last, the governor's bill raises necessary revenue to allow us to make important investments in Minnesota families. In particular, the Asset Building Coalition supports the governor's proposed investment in child care assistance program, which will help an additional 1,000 low-income families access affordable child care, and his proposed increase to the MFIP cash grant, which helps families survive during times of extreme need so they can build their way back to financial independence. These and other critical investments require resources, so we want to thank the governor for ensuring that Minnesota has the resources to help every family thrive. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Sarah Lestico and Patricia Nauman is on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Sarah Lestico, Policy and Outreach Manager at Growth and Justice, and I'm here to testify in favor of House File 2125 and the Governor's General Fund Tax Bill. Growth and Justice is a nonpartisan research and advocacy organization that seeks to find consensus around business growth and social justice towards equitable prosperity for all Minnesotans. In our statewide Thriving by Design engagement this past year, we continue to hear from both Metro and particularly Greater Minnesotans a growing demand for comprehensive investments and improvements in public goods and services. This includes border-to-border broadband, cradle-to-career education and pathways, child care assistance, restoration of crumbling infrastructure, access to affordable housing and affordable health care for all, major upgrades for roads and local transit, increased access to ride-sharing and mobility services, local government aid, and investments in clean, renewable energy. We support House File 2125 and the governor's other major tax proposals because they fund prudent investments in these increases. The bill reflects traditional Minnesotan communitarian values, which create a solid foundation for business and economic growth. Revenues for transportation and healthcare must be maintained and supplemented. In particular, we also support expansion of the working family tax credit. There is encouraging consensus from the left and the right around earned income or low income tax credits and renter credits as a mechanism to reduce poverty and increase purchasing power for disadvantaged working families. Thank you, Chairman and members, for your sufficient and fair work on this matter. We believe that this legislation will ensure a more thriving and equitable Minnesota for all.
Thank you. Next up, Tricia Nauman, and then Max Hall is on deck. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities across the seven-county metropolitan area. I'll be very brief today. I just want to express the organization's support for provisions in House File 2125 that do streamline the construction materials sales tax. This allows cities and their residents to fully access the local government sales tax exemption, local government sales tax exemption that was passed by the legislature in 2013. So we know it's not the most exciting thing to have in a budget, but we do appreciate this correction being in the governor's budget. Metro Cities also does support the provision in the governor's bill that does increase local government aid, and as Mr. Carlson noted earlier, we recognize that there are proposals moving in the House that have increases for local government aid as well, so we do support that increase so that the LGA program can work effectively. I will be happy to stand for any questions, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Next up is Max Hall.
Yeah.
Nice. And so next would be Lori Eaton. And on deck, Nazrul Abshir. Good morning and welcome. If you'd state your name, please.
Good morning and thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Lori Eaton and I'm pastor at Our Savior's Lutheran Church on Chicago Avenue in Minneapolis. I'm also a leader in Isaiah. I raised my four children in the St. Paul public school system and I now live in Plymouth. I've seen firsthand the differences in education opportunities, and that's just across the metro area. My first degree is as an educator. We know what it takes for children to learn. My faith tradition teaches that every person is created in the image of God, and that means every single child that shows up in our school system bears the divine image and is worthy of respect, no matter the wealth of their parents or the zip code they live in. My tradition also calls on us to love our neighbors as ourselves. One of my mentors used to remind me frequently that in a democracy, paying taxes is one of the ways we love our neighbors as ourselves. There are some wealthy interests and some politicians that seek to divide Minnesotans with the false narrative that taxes are taking away from hardworking people, mostly meaning white, and giving to the undeserving poor, which is code language for our black and brown neighbors. Too often, issues around taxes are weaponized to pit groups against one another when our interests are the same. Minnesotans are better than that, and we won't be divided. Our shared vocation of citizenship calls me to look out not only for my own interests, but that I extend myself to look out for the interests of the whole community. That's the vision I have for Minnesota. We are a state that cares for one another. We pool our resources to meet the needs that will benefit the whole community. The budget proposal put forth by Governor Walz includes urgently needed investment in education at all levels, and I urge you to support this proposal. My future and the future of this state are dependent upon the care and investment we place on today's children, and we all bear the consequences of inequitable investment in education. When I talk with parents, what they really long for across the board is a good school and a quality education for their children in their own neighborhood. I would be proud to have Minnesota recognized across the country for our strong commitment,
if you could please finish up,
to the well-being and excellent education of all our children. Thank you for demonstrating your commitment by supporting this bill.
Thank you. Next, Nazril Ebshir and Katie Powell is on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Hello. Thank you so much. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Nazril Ebshir. I'm the owner and director of a child care center in Minneapolis called Family First. I have 22 employees, and together we serve over 100 children. I'm a core leader of Isaiah's Kids Count on Us initiative, and I'm testifying in support of House File 2125 and the need for increased revenue for Minnesotans. I've personally witnessed the positive effects of early education in my community and other communities of color. When children are in an environment that is culturally appropriate, kids are more likely to succeed. We provide so many benefits to the children in our community, giving them opportunities to expand their minds in an environment created specifically for them, which they won't get at home or school. We cannot immerse immigrant children in American culture without acknowledging children learn in the context of their culture. We provide something that I never received from anywhere outside my home, which are feelings of comfort, safety, and security. Without an increase to child care revenue or child care assistance, there is a domino effect. Not only could centers be forced to close our small businesses, but our 20-plus employees would be unemployed. Our children will no longer have access to all the resources we provide for them. Parents will no longer be able to attend school or lose their employment, causing them to seek further government assistance. Child care is a universal issue that touches every family. Child care and the problems that come with it transcend race and class. Those of us that cater to low-income families do so much more than just provide care, and we stretch those dollars thin. But it's not enough. It costs money to be a quality-run center, and it takes resources and administrative hours. Many of us are the only ones running our offices. Funding early childhood education is vital to helping already disadvantaged children succeed. By funding CCAP, you are investing in their future. Minnesota's funding for CCAP has decreased by 25% since 2003 when you take inflation into account. Here and now, you have an opportunity to provide positive changes that will affect our communities today and further generations. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Katie Powell is next, and Mike Hickey is on deck. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Katie Powell, and I'm the statewide organizer with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, made up of the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. We are a coalition of Muslims, Jews, Protestants, and Catholics from across the state that advocate for economic stability for all Minnesotans. As a coalition of varying faiths, the names of our scriptures sometimes differ, but they all share common themes. One prominent theme centers on the idea of supporting our neighbors. Every day, our members see their neighbors struggling to meet their needs and the needs of their families. We want to thank Governor Walz for including an expansion for the Working Family Credit in his proposed budget, and specifically for adding an additional tier to the credit for families with three or more children. These changes would benefit 344,600 low and moderate income Minnesota households. The Working Family Tax Credit has been shown to support work, reduce poverty, and improve health and education of children. Many families use their credits to reduce debt, make overdue repairs, pay for basic needs, or work towards a stronger financial future by building their savings. As a state, we can help support our neighbors by investing in an expansion for the Working Family Tax Credit. We also thank Governor Walz for maintaining state and state personal and dependent exemptions, which protects families with children from seeing a state income tax increase rather than conforming to the federal tax law's changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Hickey is next, and Devin Bruce is on deck. So welcome to the committee. Good morning.
You bet, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. As many of you know, we're the state's major small business group, represent over about 10,000 members in Minnesota. At first blush, this really looks like a lot of the negative of tax conformity and not much positive. We're very concerned about this large increase on flow-through companies through base broadening to a tune of about $500 million in 2022 and 2023. We need to shine a bright light on this and find out how many small businesses are being hit by this and by how much, but that number is very concerning. And really seeing a big negative aspect of the federal base broadening with very few positives. We do strongly support and acknowledge the Section 179 expensing conformity, which is really important. Dollar per dollar, it comes in way under the $500 million hit that we're putting on flow-through companies, but that's an important issue that you and I have worked on, Mr. Chairman, for many years. Hopefully we finally get that done this year. We're also opposed to two of the other provisions in the bill, going backward on the statewide general tax by reinstituting the inflator on it. This was a small step we made on a very uncompetitive tax, and we're very opposed to going backward on that. And we're also opposed and perplexed by halting the conformity on the estate tax at, I believe, $2.7 million and not completing it to $3 million per person. And just seems unnecessary. We're far out of conformity on the estate tax, and to stop the little bit of progress we're making there, that's really going out of your way to try to raise about $11 million per average per year and hope that gets discarded and we can at least get to the $3 million. It would be nice to make some progress on that this year also. But thanks for the time.
Thank you very much. Next is Devin Bruce, and Bobby Patrick is on deck. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Devin Bruce. I am the Public Affairs Coordinator for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, MAPE. We represent over 15,000 state public professional employees located throughout the state, housed at all state agencies. We'd like to thank Chair Marquardt and the administration for putting forth this proposal, House File 2125. And we won't go over a lot of the other items that we support, but we specifically wanted to highlight a few things that would really help our members and our members also deliver their services. First, the reinstatement of the inflator on the state general levy, the repeal of which had put our state budget into a little bit of a destabilized position. Many of our services that our members provide Minnesotans rely on this funding source. And it would also, as overlooked, likely result in the loss of thousands of public sector jobs, many of which are located throughout your communities around the state and may be the largest employer if they're a state college or community college or technical college. Second, we want to thank you for the retention of the itemized deductions, including unreimbursed employee exemptions. Many of our members' jobs rely on the maintenance and ongoing professional licensing and training, including our forensic scientists at BCA, the psychologists at the state-operated facilities, and the financial experts at Revenue. We also support the governor's proposal for the LGA funding. The services our members provide also require generally that there's cooperation with local governments to deliver those essential services, particularly those Minnesotans who are most needy and vulnerable. Thank you very much for the time, and we appreciate the support.
Thank you very much. So we've got Bobby Patrick, or are we going to go back and get, is that, okay. So Max Hall and then Bobby Patrick will be, thank you, very good. Welcome, good morning. Great.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I missed my assigned spot. I'm bouncing around between here and the Corrections Division. Mr. Chair, my name is Max Hall, and I represent AFSCME Council 5. We're a public employer labor union that represents more than 43,000 workers in this state. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify on the governor's tax plan. I'm going to mostly focus on Articles 2, 5, and 6. Article 2, as Ms. Madden testified to, the working family credit expansion, we're very supportive of such a measure, including with the offset costs and the gas tax and other things that are proposed. So very supportive of Article 2, Section 9 through 10. Article 5, Section 1 is something we are very excited about. For those of you who know about our labor union, we are typically known for representing state employees, correctional officers, state agency support staff, and others. But actually, a significant majority of our membership comes from local units of government, counties and cities. And so we're very happy with the increases in local government aid and county program aid. And I'll note that our employer spoke to this, League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties. And so it's good that we're on the same page on LGA and CPA, Mr. Chairman and members. The other thing I would like to mention is something that Mr. Bruce from MAPE spoke to, which is the revenue raisers contained in Article 6, the state general levy inflator being reinstated, as well as the cigarette inflator, and the restoration of the tax on premium cigars. As I testified to in the first, I believe, hearing of yours, Mr. Chairman, I talked about these bills. You can't just look at them in one bill, and I would suggest that we can't look at this in just one bill, as we've got the gas tax and the provider tax moving along a separate track, and we're very supportive of those measures as well. With that, I will conclude.
Thank you. Bobby Patrick, and on deck is Melissa Heising. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bobby Patrick, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for Medical Alley Association. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on this legislation. Medical Alley Association has more than 600 members from across the healthcare spectrum, from medical device to biotech and digital health. Our mission is to champion and facilitate an environment that enables health innovation and care organizations to innovate, succeed, and influence the evolution of healthcare. There are two items we'd like to thank Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for including in their budget. First is the reinstatement of the Angel Investment Tax Credit. This credit was critical for attracting investment into health technology. From 2013 to 2017, 131 health technology companies raised $108 million through the credit. Additionally, nearly half of all states, including major competitive states such as Wisconsin, Massachusetts, and Illinois, having credits reinstating Angel Credit makes Minnesota an attractive place for companies to start and grow. We also appreciate the inclusion of conformity to bonus depreciation and Section 179 expensing, as well as the elimination of the Minnesota-specific add-back for Section 179. These are important tools for increasing investment in Minnesota by health technology companies, large and small. These changes provide another reason to invest in Minnesota and to keep the industry growing here rather than other potential locations where there isn't a similar disadvantage. There are also a couple items we have concerns with, but I will focus on the changes to the Qualified Data Center Program. Applying these changes to agreements that have already been entered into reflects poorly on Minnesota and would have a significant negative impact on Minnesota's competitiveness for attracting investment in the future. Keeping in mind, several of the investments made through this program were from companies already located here. Any changes to the program should be made for new investments only and should not seek to penalize those who use the program in good faith and met all requirements. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Melissa Heising and Laura Sales is on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Melissa Heising. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, a labor federation made up of more than 1,000 affiliate unions representing more than 300,000 working people across the state. We're here to testify in support of raising revenues fairly to invest in Minnesota's priorities. To that end, we want to highlight pieces of the governor's tax plan that we think are particularly important. First of all, in contrast to the 2017 federal tax bill, which handed large corporations massive permanent tax cuts and temporary individual tax cuts to benefit the wealthy few, the governor's tax plan and the budget it supports invest in working people and their communities. First, we support the state-level deduction for unreimbursed employee expenses, which was eliminated in the 2017 federal tax bill. This important deduction can amount to thousands of dollars for working people who itemize uniforms, tools, travel, and union dues. Second, we believe tax conformity legislation should have an overall progressive impact, benefiting lower and middle-income working Minnesotans, and so we are pleased to see the governor included an expansion of the working families tax credit. And finally, the governor's proposal reins in tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy that we cannot afford, such as putting the inflator back on the commercial industrial statewide property tax and freezing the estate tax exemption. With the tax cuts corporations got from the federal tax bill, it makes sense for them to pay more to fund the essential services low, moderate, and middle-income Minnesotans and their families rely on. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for your time.
Thank you.
Is Laura Sales here? I don't...
Okay, we will go to Fred Nolan. And Mr. Nolan is the last that I have on the list. So if there's a few more that either weren't here earlier or if you'd like to testify, please get ready to go. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm Fred Nolan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We represent 231 greater Minnesota school districts, educating 245,000 students daily. I'm not going to address the specifics on the governor's tax bill. I am going to ask and answer why greater Minnesota students depend more on state aid. The formula, there's two sources of funding for schools. One is the state, and it comes in two flavors. One is the formula, and it's related and linked parts like compensatory and operating capital. And the other are cost or program-driven formulas like special education, QComp, for example. The second major source of funding for schools is local property taxes, and that comes in three flavors. You have voter-approved referendums, board-approved referendums, and something called local operating revenue. Okay. So looking at the local effort side of it, let's look at the ability to pay. The ability to pay is based on median household income. If you look at the data from the American Census, American Community Survey from the Census Department, I'm going to throw some numbers at you. Median rural income is $55,000. Median metro household income is close to $80,000. That's a 2-to-3 ratio. So let's look at the tax base that you're actually assessing against. In terms of property taxes, the operating referendum and voter approved are on what we call referendum market value. That excludes seasonal recreation and excludes agriculture land. The rural median value per student is $386,000 of property wealth behind each student. The metro median value behind each student is $615,000. That's a 2-to-3.5 ratio. So you can see on both of these factors, rural taxpayers and students are disadvantaged. Interestingly enough, rural taxpayers are paying very nearly the same tax rate as metro. If you take the total amount of revenue raised against the total referendum market value of these two sectors of our state, metro pays 0.0953%. And rural pays 0.945. That's a tiny little change.
Mr. Nolan, if you can finish up, I know it goes quick.
So the difference is that the rural school districts are raising per child $683,000 less. And there's ways that the tax committee and the state can address that, and we really appreciate and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that like to testify on House File 2125? And so I'll go back. Is Kenza Hodge Musa here? Okay, or Bradley Peterson? Okay. So, and I want to thank all the testifiers for staying within the time restraints. We heard, I think, 30 testifiers in this period of time. So thank you. So members, any questions or comments that you have at this point? Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I remember last year you had expressed concerns about temporary tax increases paying for ongoing tax relief. Maybe staff could help out here and tell us in this bill what temporary spending the governor has in his budget to match the temporary tax increases.
Mr. Williams, or maybe Ms. Templin, might be able to match up ongoing and one-time revenue to one-time or ongoing funding, basically, I think is what is being asked. So Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. The question is, in the governor's budget, what of the provisions, how much is temporary revenue? You have a revenue estimate in front of you, and you also there's also a spreadsheet of the governor's bill posted on the House Fiscal Analysis website. Looking at the revenue estimate doesn't show totals, but the spreadsheet will. And in the governor's budget, the federal conformity portion of his tax recommendations for the fiscal 2021 biennium for all of the federal conformity provisions, the total estimated revenue gain, or I guess net change, which is a gain, is $849.2 million. And of that amount, there's a mix of provisions that are ongoing, and there are other provisions that are temporary. Some of these provisions are for tax year 18 through 25. And the one that has been discussed in previous years as being temporary, or one of the biggest revenue sources that is temporary, is the repatriated income, and that is $361 million that is estimated to be raised in the fiscal 2021 biennium. And so of the governor's total federal conformity revenue, there's about $849.2 million in revenue gain. And of that amount, we know for sure $361.1 million is what is temporary over 8 years. There are other provisions in addition that are also temporary, and you can see that on this spreadsheet, and at some point we can go through that either one-on-one or offline, or if you want to go through that later, that's also possible.
Very good. Chair Davids, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Markman. I guess my question would be to the chair is, do you still have the same concern you had last year?
Chair Davids, right. So it always depends. I would say the deemed repatriation is the one-time funding. There's some of the temporary funding, for example, that will end in 2026, some of the income tax provisions, so that would be the disallowance of the pass-through up to five, which in the state bill could be permanent. But we know that the deemed repatriation is one time. And so I'd have to look at all the expenditures to see if you're matching that up to one-time expenses or not, too. You know, the Section 179, for example, is a lot of upfront one-time costs and then very little ongoing costs. So it just depends on how that matches up. On the governor's bill, I haven't looked real closely on how all of that matches up. But Chair Davids, I do think we have to watch it very carefully when we are using one-time revenues for ongoing expenses, because one of the major concerns, I know one of the major concerns with Governor Walz, is to making sure we have a stable budget into the future. And so the point is well taken. I don't know how this would all match up, because like the Section 179 is upfronted, and then it, you know, so that would match up with some of the one time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what I'm looking at here too is that in the 18 bill we lowered rates. In this bill the governor spends it all. So it's good. Won't that affect the tails on us here?
And Chair Davids, I know, too, that there's one-time funding in the governor's budget, like broadband, for example. So, you know, how this, and of course, as we said yesterday, this tax bill is foundation for the investment. So there's going to be some one-time revenue, but there's also one-time spending in the rest of the budget. But
Chair Davids. Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions or comment, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a little bit of discussion about some of the testimony and others here. There is a kind of a misperception, I think, that when you increase taxes on, whether it's corporations or others, in which most of that taxes are actually passed through, there's kind of a mis misnomer, at least I believe, so that the consumer doesn't end up paying for that anyway at the end. And so I'm a little bit concerned about us raising more taxes that the consumer pays in order to give back more tax breaks for others as well, because it seems that we always lose in that regard. And pointing to the fact that we don't have in this bill, because we're only dealing with the taxes side of it, the other large tax increases that we're looking at with gas tax increases as well as the provider sick tax, the gas taxes alone of a 20-cent gas tax, if we assume that $32 million is about what one penny brings out, brings into the state, if you reduce that to $30 million to take into account for those that are outside of the state and travelers across, 20 cents is $600 million. At 5.5 million people in the state of Minnesota, that's $109 for every man, woman, and child that is raised with that gas tax. So for your family of four or five, you just multiply that, and you know what the bottom line cost is. Certainly not all of that is direct cost at the pump, but some of it is also indirect cost because of the increases that are spent or passed through in regards to increased costs prices. So I just think we have to be real careful that we don't try to assume that by raising taxes on those that aren't directly paid by the individual, that all of a sudden is free dollars. I mean, the consumer is still going to pay for it, and that that is going to impact their bottom line and cash flow as well. So I just think it's something that we need to keep an eye out for.
Any other comments? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. We've heard about county program aid and so forth, and I appreciate what county program aid does, and I appreciate the reform that was done a while ago. But in the part of the state that I live in, for the counties that are in District 1A, county program aid is not something I hear about. I mean, what I'm hearing about almost daily, well, certainly weekly, is the Line 3 revenue that's being lost, and that with Enbridge. If I remember correctly, Marshall County received a check last year from Enbridge for about $4.2 million. We've seen that the Department of Revenue has been taken to court by Enbridge based on evaluation and so forth. We don't need to get into that. And they haven't been willing to change how they go about appraising and assessing and so forth. What I'm getting at here is that we heard at the testifiers table that the foreign income provisions that are in the governor's bill are subject to the potential of a lawsuit and so forth. Based on what happened with Line 3, not just Line 3, but with Enbridge and other lawsuits that may be coming forward or are in the queue right now, Northern Natural Gas won a suit. These are really, really super significant sources of revenue for the counties, Kitson, Marshall, and Pennington County. So I just want to go on record as wanting to express great concern about the impact that the governor's proposed tax bill will have potentially on that, and I would certainly hope that at some point we could have a conversation with revenue about why these lawsuits are continuing and why they're not seemingly willing to change what they're doing, and we go to tax court and we get there's just not very much certainty in the revenue streams, and I hope that we can address that.
Yeah, and Representative Fabian, I know there was, I think Representative Sundin had the bill this year that kind of looked at that, and that is the concern that's probably separate from this tax bill, but you're talking about, you know, utilities and pipelines and so forth, and just what the tax court is ruling and so forth. So we have to look at that. As far as the international taxes, you know, there are states that are taxing the deemed repatriation and the global intangible low tax income. And, you know, the Supreme Court has looked at that. And what you can't do is treat domestic and international taxes differently. You can't discriminate between the two. And so what other states have been doing is been factoring in and actually kind of making sure things are benefiting those businesses, so it would be less than taxes that they would have been on the foreign side. So, and we're not the judicial branch. We're the legislative branch. And so we do have to, you know, I agree, we have to look at when we do that to make sure we're following the Supreme Court and so forth. But there's a lot of guidance out there, actually, that there's ways to construct these international revenue bills to, I think, be able to survive a constitutional challenge. But anyway, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, the latest revenue estimate that I have regarding just the Line 3 replacement for the counties across northern Minnesota, it's $34 million just for those counties, the impact. And it's not just counties, it's townships, it's school districts. I don't see anything in here that comes close in the governor's proposal that comes close to matching those dollars for revenue to local taxing entities. And
well, Representative Fabian, I agree. This is an issue we need to deal with because I do think the state has some responsibility. You know, they're the ones that assessed these properties but how you approach it, there's a, you know, if we've met with some folks, you could try to do something where, like, the utility or the big business owner can meet with revenue and somehow get to some agreement before it ever goes on the tax rolls. I don't know if there'd be a process to do that. There's also ways in which there's been proposals that the state should just pick up the difference. So if a county or a township or a city loses the tax base, that the city or the state would just cover that. But there might be some downsides of the state completely doing that because it might create some incentives along the way, you know, on some of the dealings. So maybe it's a portion that the state would do. So I agree with you, and I don't see that in the governor's bill being addressed. And I don't know if we can address that quite yet until we get more numbers on just what that's going to be. But it's not just the recent court case, but there's others, you know, there's four or five in the pipeline, I guess, so to speak, that could impact this. So I agree. I mean, it's an issue we need to look at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I have great respect for you and the way you run your committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I just thought I'd let you know that we did have a hearing on that on the Property Tax Division. And then the Supreme Court actually did rule that week. We actually thought they might not rule till summer. And we sent out, with the help of House Research, to our division members a memo kind of summarizing where that was, and I'll be glad to pass it on to you and anyone else who's interested in kind of following as this goes through the court system.
Thank you.
Other Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to highlight in the governor's tax bill the attention paid to county program aid and local government aid. I have heard a lot about that from different counties across the state. I had the benefit of sitting in the Property Tax Committee when we had some testimony from the city of Morris, which particularly piqued my interest because my children went to college out there. And 30% of their property is not taxable because they have a county seat, they have a hospital, and they have a university. So having an increase in local government aid really means a lot to them. And we have greater Minnesota cities that have upwards of 90% of their budget coming from local government aid and counties that are facing some of the same crises and being able to do jobs that we require them to do. We give them those jobs to do. So I do hear about that, and I just wanted to highlight that and thank the governor for paying attention to putting an increase there. Thank you.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There was some testimony had today that I thought was quite frightening and divisive about this budget, and it was about if you want to lower taxes, it's oppressive and racial and code words for different things, which I found quite bizarre at best. But let's be very clear about what this budget does. The governor's budget raises taxes on the poor and the poorest of the poor. The budget raises taxes on white, on minorities, on men, on women, on children, on young, and on old. So when we get the incident studies and where we figure out how much is regressive and how much is progressive, I'll be quite surprised if some of these groups that testified on behalf of it continue to support it. But very, very frightening testimony in my mind to be so divisive in trying to divide people. And because some of us want tax pay less in taxes, pay less in oppressive taxes, that somehow that's a code word for being against minorities is just silly.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment on something that was stated earlier. So when we increase taxes on corporations, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to get passed down to consumers 100%. It depends on the elasticity of demand and supply. And so some taxes won't be passed on 100% of the tax increase to consumers. Most of the time it won't. And it won't because they need customers to be able to purchase their goods and services. Otherwise, they may go out of business. So I think that it's vital for our state to make sure our families have disposable income, because that will help our large employers and corporations as well. And so I think that we have to have a balance in the tax bill, and I want to thank all the testifiers for coming and sharing their concerns and the things that they like about Governor Wallace's tax bill. But we are responding to the federal tax bill that gave large and permanent tax reductions to corporations and then gave small tax reductions that are temporary to working families. And so we need to help and address that federal tax bill in a way that will benefit families, working families in Minnesota. And I think that we all know that tax revenue, where it is invested wisely, will benefit the state. So I want to thank the governor for putting together a sound tax bill, and I know that Chair Marquardt's going to improve on that, and hopefully we'll get to see that soon.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since my name was not mentioned, I'll respond. just from what the Representative Schultz talked about, Department of Revenue actually said, you know, I think 45% of corporate taxes get passed on to Minnesotans, and then the other 45% get passed on to non-Minnesotans. So whether it be consumers in other states or folks around so the idea that these taxes don't get passed, over 90 to 95% do get passed on to the consumer. And, you know, just kind of responding, you know, we heard over and over and over saying, you know, we need to raise the gas tax, which is not in this bill, but because it takes money away from schools. But in this bill, we take general fund money to backfill into folks that are going to be hit because of that tax increase with general fund money. So essentially raising one tax over here because we don't want to use general fund money on transportation, and then you're using general fund money over here to try to lessen the impacts on families across the state for that tax increase. So, you know, whether you move here, you can make a point here with this dollar, but then you're using general fund essentially to, you know, back up, you know, a gas tax or regressive taxes, which this bill is chock full of regressive taxes. And, you know, we're going to, I think that what the governor's going to do is talk about how we're going to go after those evil corporations and those evil businesses across the state, kind of trying to downplay the fact that this is a very regressive bill. And it's unfortunate, but we have to look forward to it. Appreciate the time we took to hear those testifiers. And thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Well, just lastly, at the end of the day, we know from the Minnesota Grocers Association that with the governor's budget, we're all going to be paying more for bananas. So just for the record. And ice cream, if you like ice cream, and bread and milk. So keep this in your pockets, everyone. And remember, when you vote, you'll be paying more for bananas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, we're ready to close here. And just, you know, we are into the future. We are in a deficit. And so we either do nothing as a status quo, and we know there isn't such a thing as a status quo. You're either moving forward or backwards. And I do commend the governor for taking a slowing economy head on and looking at ways to jumpstart that. And that's going to cost some investments in education, building the world's best workforce. It's going to deal with investing in higher education, in our roads, in our infrastructure. And that's how you move the state forward. And so we're going to have more discussion on how you do that best. But I think this is a solid approach that will impact people in a positive way. So with that, tomorrow we are going to do the very exciting department policy and technical bill. And so prepare yourself for that. And with that, members, do not get stuck in traffic, Mr. McDonald. With that, members, we are adjourned.